Welcome to the Talented Learning Show podcast series, episode 90, with independent learning tech analyst John Lay. Today I interview perennial guest expert Tamara Lee, CEO of Authentic Learning Labs, about the current state of delivering complex continuing education content. You can find more of our fiercely independent content at talentedlearning.com. Well, welcome back, listeners, to the podcast. On this show, I am fortunate to interview the world's leading experts in extended enterprise learning solutions from both the vendor and the practitioner perspectives. Today's no different. From the expert side of the fence, I'm absolutely thrilled to have Tamer back to give us an update on selling and delivering complex continuing education or professional education content. As many listeners know, Tamer is one of the foremost innovators in continuing education technology, and he's been one of our most popular guests on Talented Learning Show podcasts and webinars over the last decade. He lives on the front lines of really some of the most complex CE initiatives in the world, working in highly accredited fields or highly regulated fields. And I first met Tamer a bunch of years ago, 10 or 11 years ago. He was then CEO of Digital Ignite, probably one of the earliest leaders in professional education, pure LMS solutions. And since then, whenever I need continuing education on continuing education, I turn to Tamer. Tamer, welcome to the Talented Learning Show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, John. It's my honor. You're too kind with your words, but I really appreciate it. It's an honor.
Cool. I'm excited to have you here because, boy, what you guys are doing and you know how things are progressing, it's always exciting. I look back and I saw it's been over 2 years since we got the update. I can't wait to hear. So, for those of you who don't know, Tamer, or listeners, watchers, you know, we're going to be diving into unique challenges in managing continuing education programs. One of the hardest things to do in learning technology, most difficult things to do, and particularly in industries that have really driving stringent accreditation requirements from the top. And really everybody has to concur, and there's shifting technology requirements and state-by-state requirements, all kinds of things that make this space really complex. And Tamer and his new organization, that's not so new anymore, from 2000, Authentic Learning Labs, basically came at this problem from a different way on solving continuing education technology that doesn't involve ripping out your whole learning infrastructure and replacing it with something else, but rather approaching it in a more modular or in a wiser way to leverage that content and automate this. And we're going to learn all about it. So, Tamer, let's start with you. Tell us how you got here. Tell us your journey. Catch everybody up on how you became the foremost expert, or one of them anyway, on professional education.
Well, we're careful of saying that we're experts, but we do love the space, and we've been in it for a while, more than two decades. We've been working with organizations that we call externally facing organizations that reach out to audiences that are not typically employees, but they're members, they're professionals, they're partners and customers of these companies and organizations. And they have some type of mandate or driver to take courses. They might be regulated by state or federal or professional bodies, or they're just needing professional education, which we typically like to call as those things that are needed post-secondary training to keep relevance in the industry or field that they're in, or to meet certain requirements on a, you know, some type of time frequency. These are the groups that we're working with. Many of them are nonprofit, but they operate like businesses, and some of them are businesses that operate very much like an official education body. So we've been working with them for a long time. We're probably myopic in that we only operate in this space. We don't do what we call K-12 education, where we're, you know, offering education to elementary students, and we don't do the typical corporate training, which is inwardly focused, what we call inwardly focused, which is, you know, training employees on harassment or corporate compliance or whatever's in the requirements of typically coming down from HR or corporate.
Yep. Excellent. And that's what you were doing 11 years ago when I first met you, focusing on that
same joke, same story. Yes.
That same space. Okay. So I keep on talking about complex continuing education. And so I thought maybe a good place to start is, what's simple continuing education? And then conversely, what makes it complex? Can you frame that out for us, what that means?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's a great way of calling it, where it's simple. The simple stuff is the stuff that we want to differentiate away from, but typically are the drivers of what we call checkbox CE learning, where it's people just trying to meet up their requirements, either annual, biannual, or whatever the time frequency is, and depending on the profession, every 2 years, every 5 years, some even frequently, more frequently. And those are what we consider CE units. And depending on your profession and your professional concentration and even your state or your region, those credit requirements may differ and vary. Those are probably, from our side, the simple things to track those, because typically a course will have, you know, in your state or my state, those will have specific credit counts. And depending if you're a surgeon and I'm a allied health professional, there might be differences in what credits I can earn for the same course. Those can get fancier, but that's the simple stuff. And I think as they get more advanced, these organizations and these bodies that represent these professions and these corporations that are trying to train people and educate them, they're getting more advanced. And it's not as much checkbox learning. It's like, are these people really spending the time to learn? Are they really reflecting knowledge and retention of knowledge? And are they meeting the objectives of the learning? And those are when we get fancier, track more data, track more performance improvement. And honestly, from an educational perspective, it's much more embracing things that we want to embrace, because it's beyond just someone, what would be considered commoditized learning. In a lot of spaces, there are a lot of providers that went very low quality, just put out content so someone could, you know, say they learned it and that counts for their credits. You know, there's a lot of providers like that in that, in those spaces. But you know, the good thing is the more complex learning is also the probably more realistically real learning that's happening, or at least trying to measure it. So we enjoy that space, even though, you know, the demands are higher.
Interesting. You could tell you that you live in that space because you're basic is a lot of people's complex. There's still another more basic one than what you mentioned. And that's when things are homogenous, you know, no matter what state you're in, you know, you get the same three credits of, you know, no matter what role you're in. And so that's where it starts off. Like that's the easy stuff. And then it moves in to what you said is medium, and then the super complex stuff. So if you're in that super complex stuff, or even in the medium to the complex, what are the industries that focus on that? Like which ones are doing that, and why is it industry based? So who and why? Tell us what you think on that.
It's a good point. Is in each field, and we see more in certain concentrations in certain fields. Obviously, healthcare across the spectrum, from surgery to allied health and everything in between, nursing, surgery, all the peripheral sciences and related fields within healthcare. They have high demands, obviously, of the professions. When you see that the profession requires that extension of knowledge beyond just the, you know, college years, then you'll also see the demands for the regulatory requirements to come beyond, once we become a professional, a licensed professional, keeping that license and keeping oneself beyond just the keeping the license, because what we consider that is kind of like the simple stuff, is staying abreast with all the movements in this field. And obviously healthcare being, you know, one, like many of the sciences, that it continues to advance, the demands on the professionals are high. And therefore these organizations are providing training, they need to keep up with those demands. And now obviously you know, we've had probably two generations or three that have been accustomed to technology. These groups are having to somewhat revolutionize what they do. In the past, it was always come to a live conference or read our journal. And those main staples are being questioned. You know, they've taken a big hit, even, you know, 10 years ago before COVID, but now with, you know, post-COVID, you certainly have seen somewhat of an existential crisis with some of these groups and the products that they offer, because they can't offer the same products anymore. At least they have to diversify. So that pressure point is even higher. Healthcare, obviously the legal profession, every state has its state bar, and those have requirements. And then each, you know, they have, you know, different categories of requirements, ethics and others. So they have to keep up. Financial services, engineering, all will require not only to meet regulatory requirements, but then also people want to specialize, in real estate. I think there's like some, green building certification and architecture as well. The movements in the industries are somewhat wide and expansive that they have to be continuously looking for differentiation, right? I can't just be a lawyer anymore. I can't, right? Especially with the number of lawyers, especially in some states. Specialization is key in a competitive landscape, and all these spaces, there are continuous demands on the professional. And then there are also, requirements, to continue to advance in other fields. We mentioned engineering and sciences, but there are others that are complementary, like notaries. The notaries profession, although a lot of people just think of them as a stamp, I mean, they're a trusted advocate for, things like contracts and things that, I think in California alone, there's over 120, 30,000, at least last count that I know of. And in every state, there are different requirements. And now with the new digital notarization acts, those people have to really relearn some of the things that they've done because, you might not be notarizing someone in person. So these things get more advanced, and I'm sure with AI, that's impacting every one of these fields. What does that mean for the education requirements? So all these groups are facing multiple fronts of changes, winds of change that they have to keep up with as a profession, alongside though just the regulatory, hey, I've just got to keep my license,
Wow. And so the challenge then becomes, to do all this and to adhere to these regulations. And I guess you have to, report back to all these central bodies, both as the provider and the individual. How does that work? How do these providers keep a tight rein on everything?
Yeah, that's a great point. And most of these groups have to report. So they typically, and from the learning space, this is one of those things where we differentiate is we understand these reporting requirements and need for data, right? It's not just that someone scored a 90% and took a course, right? Thumbs up. It's all the details around it. What state they're in. What are the requirements? What are the credits? And those usually get reported internally to the organizations that we serve, like the education team, but also to the parent body that usually is another neutral body, either a registrar or a central database that these organizations then have to report into. So they typically are kind of like a middle person after us who gets the data and then sends it out to their reporting authorities. And typically there are reporting authorities, they're typically neutral bodies that say, okay, what do you have for your professions who are taking these courses? What format did they take them in? What credits, what proof do you have of their performance? And regard, I mean, there are specifics, right, for every field, but in general, these are bodies that receive that information. And in finance, law, healthcare, all of them have those types of motherships they have to talk to and report to. They don't always look forward to it, right? But
Oh, I
they
can
all have to do
imagine.
it. Yeah.
I can imagine somebody telling you what to do. What are the names of some of these organizations that people would recognize? The bodies like ACCME, perhaps?
Yes, so that's the big one, for the medical profession, and that's in my state of Illinois. So most of the specialists and fields, orthopedics and I believe anesthesiology and the other fields like derms, all dermatology, they'll have to report into, and then also they would have topics and bodies of knowledge that are determined by the, in this case, ACME. In other financial fields, there's NASBA, NASBA, and I know in real estate there are others, but each one will have a board or a mothership that they have to get their standards from. Even in medical schools, they have to report to the American College of Graduate Medical Education, ACGME, and those boards will set standards for what is taught in these medical programs. So, there are good things that they do, right? They bring structure and the pillars of the knowledge, and then they also are somewhat of a neutral body that receives that information on performance and data. I assume some of them can provide very valuable data on industry trends and education. I haven't received that, but I've heard some of that too as well.
Wow. So how important do you think it is So if you're a normal learning management system provider that's out there that has a very strong API, and they go to an organization and they say, oh, we can use our API to integrate with, you know, PARS or the ABA or, you know, NASBA or something like that. Is that a realistic statement because technology, or is there so much around the industry that you have to learn that the technology is secondary? What are your thoughts on that?
It's somewhat of a sand trap if they just say, yeah, we could do it. Typically, they don't understand the formatting and the data and the requirements around it. So they may not even have the structure and the competency to generate the data to share it. The sharing is one aspect, and typically they'll say, well, we have APIs for all the data. But are you able to structure it specifically to my demands as my industry is different? Are you really capturing that data from the content and my content progress and performance? Typically, there's a no right at the beginning. So downstream, they can't even share that information when it's about, you know, we're dealing with an organization that's licensed a learning platform that we're building around essentially, because the learning platform itself is not tracking the data that the organization needs to just say, are these people spending a time in these curriculums and curricula, and are they actually performing well? The provider is just basically placing content on the web. And sure, they have APIs, but the APIs are limited, security is doubtful, and the frequency of updates is not where the API really meets real time. It's just basically a batch service. And most of these organizations are at a time and place now that they're expecting live data feeding all the different systems. They're not always getting at that from their providers, but that's what they're expecting. Their end users are expecting that too, right? If I complete a course, I want all the people that need to know it as soon as possible.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, you know, that's a limitation of both the services and capability experiences and the technology. And you also mentioned that, you know, that technology sometimes is already there and you just need to work around it and close the deficiencies of the learning system. What do you think the top, I don't know, two or three things are that a traditional learning system doesn't have that is critical in delivering continuing education?
Well, when we get involved, I mean, there are a lot of things that we see. Most of the organizations that work with us hit a ceiling. They've either hacked together a corporate or academic solution, which when we say corporate, it's a train, it's initial start, this LMS provider, and there are plenty of good providers. We're very careful of not disparaging anyone. Is that they're just designed differently and their roadmap is aligned with something different, or they just don't understand the space and they've just gotten into it. For example, there are academic platforms that are introducing themselves into the professional education space. They're fine platforms, but they're built for the university or the academic model. And likewise, the corporate solutions are coming in and saying, well, we have a solution that, you know, other companies are using. Why don't you use them? It's cheap and it's fast and it's great. Those are all true adverbs and adjectives. But the thing is that that doesn't always fit with the needs of the organization. So they might just get into a cheap solution, but really not fitting their needs. And what we see is there's typically a challenge of delivery. Most of these organizations are trying to deliver experiences in a different way, either delivery to their clients, and it's not reaching them either because the capabilities don't exist to segment the users or to deliver specific functionality, like video or assessment to the level they need, and or tracking. Then related to tracking of the data, they don't have the data that they need to do business, whether it's the business of official regulatory stuff or just business of understanding what people are doing. And then the third is probably just the overall experience. These organizations are competing in a market that is very diverse, broad, and very challenging. They have to deal with for-profit large, you know, probably even venture-funded organizations that are selling content to their same audience. They're dealing with what we consider gray market providers that are official providers that they've offered and approved, the association or professional education body. They're partners, but they're also, what would they call them, frenemies, I think is another word to say. They're frenemies. And then, you know, just the internal challenge of the stakeholders and board members and education teams that are constantly asking for new things, keep relevance. But these challenges, what happens is these organizations face cannot be met with the typical standard solution. And I know people say there's 200 plus LMS platforms. They all have good qualities. We don't disparage them, but the key thing is, are they designed for this type of marketplace? And typically they're not. I think the fourth one usually is scalability and performance. Can it usually these groups are, and most of them, the gross majority, are built to serve one audience, usually internal. You know, I've got a university model on Moodle, or I'm a provider like Moodle. I'm going to install it local for my local university audience. The most I will get is a couple thousand users. Or it's a corporate solution with the same audience size. You know, what most companies, you know, how many of them do you know that have more than 50,000 users? You know, we deliver that in 1 hour. You know, so it's a different experience. And then the expectation of performance, you know, when you're dealing with a company, you can tell all your company employees that tomorrow the LMS will not be available. For these organizations, you want to tell a nurse that, or a doctor or a lawyer who needs their requirements, you can't do that. So there's a mindset that's also different of how to service these organizations. From the platform side, and then also from the service side of, you know, how do you deliver something that's competing in the marketplace with high constant demand at all time? And they don't do it.
That's great. What about something that you didn't mention, or I don't think you didn't mention enough, I don't think, is around the content aspect of this. So what, you can't always get users to the LMS to take the content, or they don't always want to be in the LMS to take the content in continuing education. How do you solve for that?
It's a challenge we do face. And this is one of those reasons why people use a more specialist platform is typically they're selling to the marketplace, and their marketplace, their customers are saying, look, we already have an LMS. We are one of the biggest companies in our industry. So you need to give us your content and we'll deploy it on our LMS. Well, there's an inherent challenge with that because you're essentially giving up your IP and some of the visibility and tracking. You could certainly give them the SCORM courses. I mean, that's why SCORM was created in AICC and these standards is portability, right? With portability, you lose visibility. So what we think is the better way is you can use what the industry has known as syndication or dispatching of content, where you can give access to the content, but you don't give away the content. Essentially, they get an empty redirect to you. We facilitate that. So we can package clients' content without giving away their content. So their customer is happy. The big customer, Acme Company, is happy. They get their LMS to launch our clients' content. Our clients happy because they still maintain the visibility. They can control all their usage. They monitor the license, and they can also control the intellectual property and the academic vigor of the product. There's the other way is they can also host mini sites for this customer, like Acme. Acme can land in a subsite within the broader LMS of this our customer. We have these capabilities. I think different companies and different platforms call it differently. You know, B2B portals or satellite sites or sub portals. We have that full support. And then with each one, they can be branded, configured. You can sell commerce. You can do different authentication schemes for each one. So Acme may have SSO, and a PepsiCo might come in and they might want, buy authentication. Those are things that are all supported. So those are two ways we do it. And those are all growing in importance with the organizations we work with. They want to find creative ways to getting the content into the context of the need for their customers. So we support them.
Right. And it doesn't have to be LMSs either. It can be anything.
Yeah. Like someone has said, exactly. Products. Web pages. Someone says, look, we have all these users. They're frequently using Microsoft Teams. Well, Microsoft Teams is just a web app, right? We can launch courses from there and we can identify them, and we can only allow those people that are from that organization's authentication scheme. So we can do that. We have another group that, you know, wants to serve prisoners and in prison systems. And that's obviously very regulated and restricted. We can do that without the formality of going to a public website and things like that. We can follow security schemes that the organization's offering.
Yeah, you'd imagine they want their content locked down.
Yes.
The what about we're running out of time as we always do, Tamer. So how about the role of AI real quickly, either in your current continuing education solutions or on the horizon? What do you think the role of that's going to be for continuing education providers?
We're never that hip to say that we knew this before everybody else, or we were using it. But we were, in truth, we were using AI, 5, 6 years ago, to do analysis of big amounts of texts and test answers and things like that. And that's just gotten better for us. And because we've learned, just like the machines have learned, we've gotten better at it. It's definitely something. I think of it in, it's almost like science fiction. How crazy can it could solve problems and answer questions and somewhat show reason, and where we it's definitely going to be a demonstrative impact on learning. I'm not smart enough to figure out where it will be, but we definitely recognize that it has potential on everything that we touch, especially all the pain points of learning, scaling, developing content, analyzing complex information and making sense of it. And in all those three areas, we're doing that now. We're not experts in it per se, but we are definitely learning from it, and we're providing value. Some of the more tangible things are transcription, translation. Those we're getting to a refined point. Sentiment analysis with, surveys. We're able to give value to a client that doesn't want to pore over a lot of information to understand people's feedback. We can do that, or test answers. Where we think it'll be really helpful is, generative content, chatbots, and things that people are doing now. Obviously, video. Can we do videos where, now with, I think it's Sora and others, getting access to stuff like that where we can generate, which was very expensive before, very high quality video and animations. Those are some things that we aspire to do. I know we're.
Wow.
I spoke a little bit too long, but hopefully that
No
answered
way. No way.
your question.
Outstanding.
Thanks,
Outstanding. So
John.
today you probably said about 78 things that us continuing education providers think that, ooh, that's a good idea, or that's my challenge, or that's something I could do. But let's water it down for them. If you could choose one thing that continuing education providers can do in 2025 here to take it to the next level, what would you recommend? One or two things.
Man, again, I only share this with my sincere disclaimer that we avoid, try to, what is it, the saying of reading tea leaves and things like that, or being a futurist. I've never understood the role of a futurist, but obviously for us is, well, we start going back to the fundamentals with these organizations and say, look into your mission statements and your business objectives. Are you meeting them? In your professional mission, there's something along the lines of you representing the excellence in your profession. And we asked them, are you meeting that goal right now, delivering the educational technologies you have in store right now? And if not, what's keeping you from it? And let's help you build a plan, a 3, 6 to 12 month plan on how to change that incrementally with measurable results. Typically that works. So we go back to fundamentals. We'd like to talk about AI and things like that, but those are means to the end, and we know that those will be things that we can control,
Sage
somewhat control.
advice.
Thank you,
Tamer
John.
Ali, CEO,
Thanks,
founder, Authentic Learning Labs. Thanks very much for joining us
John.
today and sharing your wisdom and experience. It was great to have you.
Same here. Great to be with you.
Awesome.
Thanks,
Listeners,
John.
I know you got a lot out of this one. I sure did. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Talented Learning Show, and we hope to see you on the next. Have a great day. We'll see you soon.